Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, Federal News Radio interviews the CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes.
My special guest today is Steve Knode, the University of Maryland's University College Program Director for the CIO Certificate Program. Steve, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, let's do some basics. The Federal CIO Certificate Program, you're one of several universities that has a program around the Federal CIO and the Certificate Program. Give me an overview of what the program is about.
There's seven colleges authorized to give out the GSA CIO Certificate. It really started with the 1996 Kleiner-Cohen or ITMRA Act. And so, you know, it established a set of competencies, 12 in all, that people should be familiar with and, in fact, competent in order to be CIOs in the federal government. That's how it started in 96, and so it's migrated to what it is now. And so in our program, and I'm sure the other schools do similar, we try to cover all of those competencies and get people ready to get into the business of trying to be a CIO. And it's pretty sporty to cover all that, but we do the best we can in our program.
Tell me some details about the program itself.
Ours is a one-year certificate program consisting of four seminars, 6 credit hours each. And I say seminars because they're really broader than courses. Each one is 10 weeks long, totally online. We probably have the only program that's totally online and featuring an executive coaching aspect. I'll mention a little bit about that in a minute. We do meet each week online, using some advanced technology, so we have face-to-face, sort of, using cameras and mics. And then we have assignments each week. Each of the seminars covers a broad array of courses. I happen to teach both the second seminar and half of the third one. And we're covering everything, you know, that's required by the Kleiner-Cohen Act, everything from leadership to information architecture to project management to understanding and managing technologies, et cetera. So ours are 10 weeks long, 6 graduate credits each, online with a 3-week break in between. So if you add that up, it takes 1 year. And we do it as a cohort. The students take their classes together starting in October and they finish in the following September. Included in that is something that I think is unique. You know, a couple of years ago, we asked our board of directors, what could we add to enhance it? And they said, can you do more with leadership? So we took the extra step of providing, at no additional cost, some executive leadership coaching. That's not done by the faculty, it's done by specialized people who understand how to do that. And what we're trying to do is basically expand the capabilities of our students to be leaders. Many of them come from technology fields and may not have had the opportunity to manage or lead teams or recruit teams or do transformational change. And so the executive coaching helps them expand their capabilities in that area. Now, when you finish our program, you've got 24 graduate credits. You can then parlay that with an additional 12 credits and get a master's degree from UMUC in either technology management or information technology. And beginning last year, we added a final option that says after you've done that, you can take an additional 18 hours, 3 seminars online, and get an MBA. So our students could be equipped with a CIO certificate from GSA, a master's degree in technology management or information technology, and an MBA in a period of about 2.5 years. And that's pretty powerful. We hope to go help them find and keep good jobs. So it's working pretty well. We're in our 6th year of doing it like this.
That's an incredible amount of work, both from a short amount of time, but also just everything that comes from it. Let me back up for a sec. Definitely want to get into the curriculum in more detail. But before I do that, I want to talk more about the online features, being the fact that it's only online, being the fact that, you know, you guys are still meeting face-to-face but using technology. Give me a sense of how that works. Do the students have to buy special equipment, or is that given to them as part of the course costs?
They don't have to buy any special equipment. We use an online program. There's several out there. We use Wimba at the moment, and what it allows you to do is log into a website, and you can have a camera and a mic, and we can see each other. We can have small little thumbnail pictures of each other, and it's very interactive. I've been teaching a long time, and for me it was an adjustment when I first started teaching anywhere online, but this has worked out great. I have almost the same feeling of being in the classroom. Not quite, of course, a little different. But it really helps because I've had students, I'm an Army major from Iraq, I've had students from California, from Texas, from Florida. So it helps that they don't have to be in the D.C. area for our program, and it's worked out quite well. They can also be on business travel. They can be wherever they want as long as they can get to the Internet with a reasonable bandwidth. It works quite well. So we do a synchronous session each week for about an hour and a half, which consists of lecture sometimes and discussion and questions and back and forth with the students. all of which is recorded, so there is no requirement for students to attend live. If they can't make it, there's no penalty for that. And then the link to the archive is made available to them immediately so they can go watch it and be caught up on whatever the discussion was, whatever the upcoming assignments are. Works pretty well. You'd be surprised how technology has reached the point where everything from GoToMeeting and other programs are such now that you actually can do a pretty good job of having a, quote, face-to-face, unquote, meeting without being face-to-face. And I like it that way.
You know, it's interesting because you say it works pretty well because, as you said, it took a bit of an adjustment for you. I would tell you that that seems like one of the best parts of being in a class like that is the peer-to-peer kind of networking, the getting to know people, to kind of sharing problems. Does that still happen where if somebody has a problem, they still feel comfortable to bring it up to the class? Or do you see it maybe not as readily because some people are shyer?
Actually, I think it works better, Jason. I'll tell you why. I think there are people who are introverted or whatever. And, of course, when you're in the classroom, there is a chat window. And a lot of those people feel more comfortable typing in questions or queries or whatever they'd like to. And, of course, I'd say a significant percentage of our assignments are what we call conference activities, wherein they're required to contribute and discuss how things are done in their organization. When I began teaching emerging technologies and new technologies years ago in other courses, I always couched it as what and so what. I wanted to tell them what the technology was, and then the so what was, okay, so what's the impact of this? Well, I've added sort of a third piece to that. I now focus on what, so what, and now what, because now what do I do in my organization? So we might have a week where we'll have the assignment will be in the chat room, and this is all in the same conference area where we meet, will be to discuss or portray how your organization is dealing with cloud computing or virtualization. And the richness of the ideas and the views and the approaches taken is tremendous. I learn more than they do because they're really quite candid in talking about how their organization views these technologies in my course, or how they are implementing, or what the problems are, what the concerns are, what their competitors are doing. So we have pretty good discussion. And there's no reluctance to do pushback because we invite that. You know, we realize this is still such an evolving area, the whole information technology revolution, that you've got to have a lot of people skeptical and questioning whether this is exactly right for their organization. I've been very pleased at how interactive the discussions and the exchange of viewpoints has been.
All right, well, we're going to take a break in a quick second, but before we do that, let me just ask a little bit about the specifics of the cost. How much does it cost? Do agencies typically pay for the coursework? And where do you see a lot of students coming from? You mentioned one service member from Iraq, but where else do you see some of the agencies that are sending students your way?
Well, we get a lot of students from the federal government, of course, but it turns out about 40% of our students come from the civilian world. I've queried them, and many of them, some of them, want to get jobs in the federal government, so they're interested in the program and getting the certification. Some, however, just want to get their organizations familiar with what's going on in the federal government, perhaps so they can sell more to the federal government. And others realize that the same questions, competencies, and problems and opportunities that exist in the federal government exist in the private sector. So we've had students from IBM. We've had students from Oracle. We've had students from we've had two or three people who are actually already CIOs go through the program to get that additional certification. So they come from all kinds of agencies, and it's a pretty good deal. The cost, to get back to that question, right now is $1,181 per credit hour. And that includes all of the books. We supply all the books because the books change so rapidly, we felt it was easier for us to provide them. And it also includes the cost of all the executive coaching. So it's actually pretty reasonable, we think, for what you're getting. And, we do one cohort a year, and we usually have 25 students or so. Demand has been improving, and we may go to more, but right now we just do one cohort a year starting in the fall. And people who want to get started early can start on some of those additional courses they could take to get the master's degree. So it seems to work out pretty well.
And traditionally, is it paid for by the company, paid for by the agency, paid for by the student, or a combination?
A combination. You know, years ago, I think agencies, certainly private companies, were paying more easily for education. It's a little bit harder to get that funding now, but we certainly have had good luck in either student aid or financial assistance or people who still have remnants of the VA bill and things like that. So we've been able to accommodate pretty well the financing side of it.
All right, well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's get into more specifics about the courses. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today is Steve Knode, the University of Maryland's University College Program Director for the CIO Certificate Program.
This heavyweight bout is about to begin. The challenger wears white trunks with a blue stripe, and the champ is wearing, looks like an examination gown from the doctor's office. And from the back, we can... Ooh, that's not pretty. Champ, what's with the crazy getup?
I've got to take care of my family.
Yeah, so?
Well, when you love your family, you got to go in and get those important medical screens. A lot of potentially deadly diseases can be treated if you catch them in time.
So you wear the examination gown because...
Because I'm a real man. Real men take care of their families and get those tests. Real men wear gowns.
Okay, champ. Good luck. Here we go. The champ's not wasting any time. Oh, it's over. This fight is over. Champ, you barely broke a sweat. Any words for your fans out there?
Remember, go to ahrq.gov for a list of the tests they need to get and when to get them.
What was that web address again?
ahrq.gov. And remember, real men wear gowns.
Go to ahrq.gov. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AHRQ, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today is Steve Knode, the University of Maryland University College's Program Director for the CIO Certificate Program. Now, Steve, before break, you give us a good overview of the program. Now, let's get into some details. There's four seminars, 6 credit hours each, 10 weeks long. Go into each of the four seminars. Tell me what they're about.
The first one is the Strategic Management of Technology. Second one is Leading Change and Innovation in Technology. Third one is Information Security and Finance. And the fourth one is Program Management. Now, briefly in each of those, and they're full of stuff because, you know, we're covering a wide swath of material to get through all of the Clinger Cohen competencies. But we start with the CIO 610 program, which is a study of how technology can be used as a component of global strategy and an enterprise, and how it can be linked with corporate strategy and identifying options, including everything from electronic commerce, strategic analysis, technology forecasting, recruiting the right teams, information architecture, corporate intelligence. Woo, sounds like a long list, and it is. And we look at how that's progressed from a historical perspective. You know, you go back a few years, the CIO was primarily running wires through the ceiling and the floor and rebooting the servers and sort of posting new software updates. And now the CIO is definitely viewed as a key business partner and a key decision maker. And so we try to emphasize that in that first course. We rely on things, everything from the recent IBM Essential CIO study, which was phenomenal, talking about how CIOs need to be much more a business partner. All of that's kind of included in that first course. The second course, Leading Change and Innovation in Technology, I happen to teach that course, so I'm very familiar with it, teaching it right now, in fact. We talk about how you can leverage technology in the organization to make a change. And this leads us to sort of a mega issue about whether organizations want to view technology as a necessary evil or a utility. In other words, get it for the cheapest cost and a little bit that you need, or whether you're an organization that wants to leverage the technology and get into some of the newer things like data mining, business intelligence, dashboards, all those kinds of things where you can actually leverage the technology. And then, of course, try to superimpose on that how the federal government views that. So we get into everything from decision-making, systems thinking, teamwork, how to allocate human capital and cognitive weaknesses and biases. And then we spend a lot of time on how to make organizational change effective, because that's pretty tough. Even if you buy into the technology, sometimes getting the organization to change. So you have to sort of assess where your organization is and how ready they are for change. And then you have to examine strategies to make that change if you think the technology is not being used properly.
Let me jump in real quick, because you said two things that were really fascinating. You seem to be describing a lot of the soft skills that they have a reputation for not having all the time.
Right. And
specifically, I really thought that was interesting when you talked about how to assess whether your organization is ready to change or not. Because you always hear about the technology. It's never the technology. It's always the culture. Got to change the culture.
Right.
Do you deal with that issue, the big culture change issue?
Oh, absolutely. We try to advertise. We're pushing for the transformational CIO, you know, because the pace of change has been so rapid that it's just mind-boggling. And so, yes, the soft skills are very much important. In fact, you bring up a good point. We never did, but I don't think anyone's really teaching any programming skills or technical skills like looking at the wiring diagrams or anything like that. The CIO is much more into the softer side now, and much more, he or she has to be the person that understands where the technology is, where it's come from, where it's going, what your competitors are doing, and the pros and cons about implementing that in your organization. Then the question is, how do I do that? How do I get this resistance to change overcome and things like that? So we deal with all of that in the second course. And it's pretty sporty, but it's one of the more enjoyable things I do at the University of Maryland in terms of from a teaching aspect. Our third course, we deal with, I don't want to call them the necessary evils, but we deal with information security and finance. You know, you do have a tremendous responsibility as a CIO to deal with things like FISMA, the Federal Information Systems Management Act, Information Security Management Act, and you have to deal with Sarbanes-Oxley and other finance things. So that course really gets into how to deal with all of those requirements, how to deal with the growing need to protect information. You know, as you move to the cloud and virtualization, the good news is you probably save money. The bad news is it might leverage up some of the threats from a security point of view. And, of course, the financial reporting requirements are voluminous, and students need to understand how the CIO can deal with that. So that course is really all about how to leverage from the financial aspect and how to protect from the information security aspect. And then our last seminar is program and project management. I think every CIO needs to be aware that if he or she is successful in suggesting and pushing and being an innovator and leading change, the bosses are going to turn to that person and say, okay, make it happen. So either de facto or de jure, you become a program manager. And that's one of the key aspects of the whole Clinger-Cohen Competency Act. They have to be really good at that. And that's quite a problem, getting good, effective project management skills, which is an art and a science, into our students. And so they enjoy that quite a bit. And so that's a full course on dealing with everything from supply chain management, customer relationship management, project management, how to deal with program offices, well, how to manage a project. And as you know, there's probably only a few people who are successful at that all of the time. So we're trying to make sure our people go out well-armed and well-versed in being able to be program and project managers.
All right, let me back up one more time because I want to talk more about information security, cybersecurity. I find it interesting that you were putting that along with finance, because if there's one area that I think CIOs need maybe some more help with, it is around cybersecurity. It's not that federal agencies aren't secure. I mean, I think everyone faces the same problem. I just think that the problem is so large that you could probably spend the whole 10 weeks just on cybersecurity. So how do you break that down? How do you decide that it's going to be 6 weeks or 4 weeks or how many weeks?
In fact, I think you could spend, you know, many more weeks than 10 on information security. We have an entire cybersecurity master's degree at the University of Maryland, University College, that's growing by leaps and bounds. Unfortunately, given the length of the program and all, we have to sort of chop up things more than we'd like to. But we actually split it pretty even between finance and security, about 5 weeks each. And again, the intent is to make them well aware of what all the threat environment looks like, what the strategies are for combating that, give them plenty of examples and approaches, familiarize them with the requirements from the law point of view, and arm them so that they certainly can go out and deal with that. I don't think we're intending to make them security experts, but we're certainly making them totally aware and familiar with what's going on in the world of, you know, advanced persistent threats and other things. And we're doing the same thing on the finance side. So yes, we'd love to have many more weeks and many more courses and seminars for everything, but it becomes a practical matter of packaging. And this seems to work well. We've been doing it this way for about 4 years. And it seems like combining the finance and the security in one course was the easiest way to package those two topics.
All right, well, let's take another break. And then when we come back, let's talk about that fourth seminar in a little more detail. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Steve Code, the University of Maryland University College's Program Director for CIO Certificate Program.
Excuse me, do you know how to get to Maine and Maple?
Do you have these in a 7.5?
How's that cooked?
Can I get that shipped overnight?
Is there a direct flight?
How long does the warranty last?
What's your soup of the day?
How do you change the ringtone?
Does it come in blue?
Does this bus stop at Elm Street?
We ask questions everywhere in life.
Is it raining out?
What time's the meeting?
How much does this cost?
Does it have four-wheel drive?
Have we met before?
What's my account balance?
Yet somehow, when we get to the doctor's office...
Any questions?
No.
We clam up. Ask questions.
What is this test for?
Are there any side effects?
When do I get my results?
Questions lead to better health care. Go to ahrq.gov for a list of 10 questions everyone should know. Questions are the answer. Public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today is Steve Knode, the University of Maryland University College's Program Director for the CIO Certificate Program. Now, Steve, before break, we were going through each of the seminars. You laid out the specifics around three of them. Let's talk about that fourth one, Program and Project Management. One of the most difficult, challenging things the government faces, not just because there's not enough qualified people, but because of the size of the programs and projects. You know, we're not talking about a few hundred thousand dollars, but millions and sometimes tens and hundreds of millions of dollars. Give me a sense of what you guys work on in Program and Project Management.
Well, you're exactly right. This is a huge challenge. Even if you recognize the need to change, implement new programs, whatever, getting it done is where the rubber meets the road. And so we have one entire seminar on Program and Project Management. It's that important. And, of course, that whole field is a combination of some science. You know, there's technologies, tools, software tools like Microsoft Project, et cetera, to help you with some of the administrative side. But it's really a field that employs leadership, management, skill sets, understanding needs, doing trade-offs, keeping things on time and on schedule. So I'm very fortunate to have an excellent professor in the program who has a wealth of experience, Dr. Steve Versace, in project management, and he's dealt with government programs specifically. So we understand the problems. Now, an additional problem in the IT side is the fact that IT is changing so much. So by the time you start with a program, the technology that you're trying to implement or change or adjust to may migrate through several iterations or even disappear. So we have to be able to deal with scope creep and all those kinds of things. And we do it quite well. And then, of course, you have to be a good leader. This is where a lot of that leadership comes in, being able to get good people on the team, people who are knowledgeable, people who work on their own, et cetera. So it's a challenge, but we've been very lucky and very fortunate in having the right people. And really, this is one of the most popular things we do is giving people that PM, that project management experience. We let them try things in the classroom, and we let them understand the pros and the cons. We look at some of the failures. We look at some of the success stories.
One of the things that occurred to me as you're kind of going through project management is the move by the government toward agile development, the idea of, you know, modular contracting. Have you guys had to kind of pick that up over the last year or two as you've seen changes in government?
The whole idea of making more agile organizations includes that. So, yes, we've included that. Which sort of brings us to how we, I guess you were going to ask about how we keep updated. And that's really, again, I'm fortunate to have faculty who take a vivid interest in updating their courses. We look at every course every year. We update them significantly. We try to stay ahead of the curve. And again, I monitor all the courses and keep up with things. But we also have faculty who are really proactive. All of our faculty, by the way, have been out in the real world doing real things and are now faculty members. They have the requisite credentials. They have the PhDs and all. But they also come and primarily from government experience. So they have a lot of experience with the various topics that we're teaching in the classroom. Since it's a small program, we don't have a whole large contingent of faculty. But it's important to me to have the right people teaching it to make things so that they are up to date. I don't want any surprises. We do that. Now, of course, I publish a monthly newsletter on emerging technologies and tweet, and we all keep up with all of the new technologies, whether it's mobile technologies or whether it's Web 2.0 or things like that, and we talk a lot. So we're always exchanging ideas, viewpoints, perspectives, and we have our little meetings periodically to make sure that we're all on the right track and make sure that the student feedback is what we want. One of the ways we keep up is I have a social network I established for all of our grads, and so they're invited to join. Most of them do, and in there they can ask questions even after they've graduated. They can start discussion forums. They can exchange ideas, best practices. They can bring in podcasts and videos they find interesting. They can exchange job openings, events. So it keeps them connected because they have similar problems, even though they're working in different various organizations.
And I imagine that also helps you guys keep up to date in terms of the curriculum because you see what's being talked about, what problems
Absolutely.
Are being asked.
Absolutely. When we get a question in that forum, we have to go say, do we have a good answer for this? Or can we point them to some literature, a study, a research, a point of contact, someone? So we continue to stay involved and active with our students after graduation. It's sort of our de facto alumni association, if you will.
And I think that makes such a difference by having that feedback because your students are people who are in the mix and they could tell you, hey, would it have helped if I had this or that?
Right. And they may find someone else who's already solved that problem or can explain the risks and the pros and cons. And so that's where the discussion forums, the exchange of best business practices and all that turns in. It's a great resource for me because I go in and see what's hot, and that's where you find out exactly what people are doing with things like cloud computing, virtualization, et cetera, business intelligence. So it's great.
One of the things that occurred to me is the idea of the program has been around, you said, for about 6 or 7 years, but ClearCone's been around for more than 15 years. How has that certificate program changed over the last, 5, 6, 7 years?
You know, every 2 years or so, the Klinger-Cohen competencies, the 12 major POTS, are updated. You know, increased emphasis on this, decreased emphasis on that. And those of us who are involved with the programs, not only at UMBC but the other schools, all have an input to that. We're not the main people who change it, but we have an input. And so the thing has migrated quite substantially over several iterations during the last few years. You know, again, as I said earlier, the CIO used to be primarily a techie. Now it's primarily a decision maker. The CIO used to be in middle management, primarily now, at least in many organizations, moving to upper management, a full seat at the C table with the CEO, the COO, et cetera. Much more business involvement focused. The CIO not only has to understand technology, has to be the person who can explain to the others how the technology can help leverage the business. Now, that may apply more in the business world than in the government, but with the initiatives from President Obama for e-government and dashboards and visibility, it applies equally there. And so we see the CIO's role sort of equally split from maintainer, which used to be the primary role, keeping the as-is thing going, to equally split with implementer and visionary focusing on the 2B role, because things change so quickly. Someone has got to be looking ahead and seeing what's right around the corner and how's it going to impact the organization. And what are the pros and cons, and how do I make it happen if I want to make it happen? So we have constant change in what we teach in terms of the emphasis. The new technologies come and go. Of course, the emphasis on leadership skills pretty much is steady because we need that. But we're always updating and looking at what's really hot, what's really in favor, and what requires more emphasis, and putting a little more on that and a little less on some of the other things.
And I imagine things have changed as the administration changed. And for instance, the last administration under the Bush administration, they were interested in shared services and lines of business,
right.
E-government. And then all of a sudden we get the shift to open government and cloud computing, and,
yep.
and cyber's kind of been marbled through everything. Does that make it difficult? And do you have to end up reworking your courses quite often?
Well, when you say difficult, that sort of has a negative connotation. I view it as exciting. I like doing that. There are probably a lot of people who may not want to change their course material as often as we have to in the CIO program. But all of us who are involved at UMUC look at that as really the interesting part, because the technology, I've been watching it since, present at the creation, so to speak, from 1980s when personal computers, the web, and everything else didn't exist. And I just shake my head at how fast we've come to where we are today. And, of course, I also understand the pace we're on for the future is even more steep. So we enjoy that. It's tumultuous, it's turbulent, but I think it's part of the fun of teaching in this business.
Well, very nice on that note. Unfortunately, we are out of time. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest this week was Steve Knode, the University of Maryland University College Program Director for the CIO Certificate Program. Steve, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Jason.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Ask the CIO, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.
Government financial managers are committed to produce timely, reliable, and useful financial information. Stay on top of issues that affect you at AGA's 10th Annual National Leadership Conference, February 16th and 18th at the Ronald Reagan Building and International Trade Center. AGA's NLC features the latest tools and innovations to help agencies do their jobs more easily and more effectively. Don't miss it. Register today at agacgfm.org/NLC.
The Department of Defense faces some big changes in the coming years. I'm Federal News Radio's DoD reporter, Jared Serbin. We help you track those changes every Wednesday afternoon from 2 to 3 with On DoD. Each week, we'll talk one-on-one with defense experts and senior managers about the policies, programs, and innovations that affect warfighters and how the military will continue to meet its mission. That's On DoD, Wednesday afternoons at 2, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.